This is the Blue Room. 1 hour, everything Everton. The Blue Room on City Talk 105.9.
Good evening, welcome to the Blue Room on City Talk 105.9 with me, Peter McPartland. I'm joined in the studio by Matt Jones. It's just us again, Matt.
It's the two-man show now, isn't it?
The flip-flops are clearly on from both Daves. It's not good enough. What's annoying is Dave Downey sits here all year and moans. And when we've got something positive to say, he's nowhere near it. And Dave Bennett sits here all year positive. And when we've got something to positive to say, he's not here either. What's going on?
I think Dave Downey just likes moaning, wouldn't you? You know, cynics would say anyway.
He has took some stick on Twitter this week. And I'm shocked that he's not here tonight to defend himself. I really am, because he has took some mad abuse about all kinds of things. And I'm actually really disappointed he's not here. Just so we could sit here and have a really chilled out, happy show. Mm. And it's surprising he's not here.
I'm sure he'd find something still, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I'm sure a lot of people will be saying the same thing about us. Obviously, coming up on the show, we're talking about Sunday's fantastic victory over Manchester United. In part two, we're going to be joined by Tony Barrett from The Times. He's up there in Hull. Brave and Hull tonight. He's going to be talking about something we talked about on last week's show. Everton Football Club in the media. He's going to give the media side of it. He's going to tell us, you know, from a local point of view. He used to work for the Liverpool Echo, and now he works obviously in the national point of view, working for the Times. He's going to come on. He's going to give us a little bit of his perspective on things. I've seen him today talking to loads of Blues on Twitter, taking loads of sticks. So that'll be interesting. And in part three, we'll be looking forward to the, as I've described, it's the El Clavico on Saturday. It's the game to win Tom Cleverley's soul. This is how we're looking forward to Saturday's
El Clavico.
That's no one else is saying that's just me. I'm just sad. let's talk about Sunday's unexpected win against Manchester United. And it was very unexpected, a 3-0 victory against a very much informed Manchester United team. I know we're informed, but as we've already said, it is flip-flop weather. It is that time of year. But we went into this game and I thought we were perfectly set up to play Manchester United. I thought Roberto Martinez went back to very much things he did last season against top sides like Arsenal and against Manchester United. He tactically defeated them, and not only that, he gave up the possession, which is very much un-Martinez like. But has served us so well in big games.
Yeah, has. If you look at how we played against Wolfsburg away, which I still think is probably our best game of the season this year, we surrendered the ball in that game and we counter attacked, and like you said, we did it there. And there's a general consensus amongst a lot of people, especially in the national press, like you mentioned there, that Martinez's teams like to control the ball. It's all slow, probing possession type play. Whereas, in fact, if you look at a lot of our best performances under him, it's been when we're sitting deep and we're springing through the plays we've gotten in advanced areas. And it's not something that's easy to do either. It's when you're playing against a team that have got players like Rooney and Juan Mata and Herrera and Fellaini, a lot of different attacking options. You can mix it up. They can play technical football. It's tough to defend against, but on Sunday we were cohesive. We were intense. I think it was the best we've been off the ball all season in terms of tenacity in the tackle, getting stuck into them and shutting off the spaces for those players to work with. And the players in the team, the likes of Barkley, McCarthy now as well, he's happy surging forward. Aaron Lennon on the right and Lukaku. We've got players who are happy to drive forward the ball. And for even though we didn't have much of the ball, it was a performance I really enjoyed. It's great to see our players picking up the ball like that and driving forward and committing the Manchester United defenders, isolating players and taking them on. And it was great to watch. And even a set piece, three in a row, good crosses into the box. The third one eventually. You know what's better than seeing a header like that?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Duncan Ferguson will agree with you on that.
Yeah,
one.
I think you've said in the past. You know, you could see teams, couldn't you, and what you celebrated it. And I think you said in the past, Everton are almost synonymous with players who are great in the air and scoring great headed goals. You look at the likes of Ferguson, Cahill, Derek Manfield, Dave Watson, all those sorts of names, and it's great to see a goal like that. So I came up the ground and I was just delighted with the way we played, and I really, really enjoyed the performance.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, I watched a couple of these Manchester United sort of fan reaction videos after the game, and the first things they're saying is, how did we lose that game? How did we have so much control of the ball and lose that game? And it's easy to say that, But we've been in a very similar position this season so many times. It's okay having lots of possession, but if you don't do anything with it and you move it slowly and the other team do a really, really good job on you, because let's be honest, don't take anything away from Everton, okay? They might have only had 38% of possession, but what they did off the ball was to use a Roberto Martinez with, phenomenal. they hounded and they chased and they got into tight groups and surrounded the ball, and they let it go left to right. They let it shuffle side to side, but when they tried to, you know, cut through, they just wouldn't allow them to do that. And I thought defensively it was one of our, you know, probably one of our best performances of the season, if not the best performance of the season. And his tactics were spot on. And there is obviously, you know, there is the, if you want to be a top team or you want to try and be a top team, you've got to impose yourself on sides. And that's what we've done on so many sides this season. It's come out the other way. But it is nice to see Roberto Martinez go against the people who are supposed to be the best out there and match them stride for stride tactically. And that's what impressed me so much on Sunday. He done that so well. And I think obviously one of the main reasons for that is that he can keep, or he has been able to keep since we obviously went out of the Europa League, he's been able to keep a steady side. Obviously, the back four look great. Tim Howard looks great. You know, he's getting those three in front playing regularly together now. McCarthy and Gareth Barry and Ross Barkley. And obviously on the right-hand side, again, Lennon's adding so much to defensively and attacking. And Lukaku, again, I thought Lukaku was great on Sunday. He gave us a brilliant foil. And we've sort of got the left-hand side sorted now with Osman playing in there. And it's all just fell into place. Unfortunately, it fell too late, really, you know, to make an impact on the season. But it shows you what a difference playing just week in and week out. And you've got to find that balance, haven't you, really? That's the main thing.
Yeah, I think the word I used a lot on Sunday watching the game was how dynamic we were. And the players you mentioned there, McCarthy, Lennon, Barkley, Lukaku, Coleman even to an extent as well, all getting about the pitch well, all getting stuck in, all making us a really cohesive unit. And just on the possession thing that you mentioned just before, I think there's a fine line between controlling the ball and having control of the game. I think it's something that we've seen a lot this season where we've had control of the ball, but because we don't move it quick enough, we don't have enough ingenuity in our play, we trap ourselves in the opposition, well, around halfway. And the opponents, as soon as they pick the ball off, they can spring forward then. And if you are a team like us or like United, who have got fullbacks like Valencia and Luke Shaw who are bombing up the pitch, all of a sudden you're so isolated then. And it was a game where, even though we had hardly any of the ball, and people were saying, I watched the Sky highlights when I got back that night, and the commentator said, oh, United must be wondering how they're behind here. And I was thinking, you know, are you watching the same sort of game? It's they had a lot of the ball, but I never ever felt in danger, apart from when Fellaini fouled Barry and went through on goal. That was the only time in the match that I really thought that United were going to score, and it was brilliant. It was good to see. And I think there's been a slight tweak in the formation that he's been playing as well. Instead of a 4-2-3-1 with the two sitting, it's more Gareth Barry sitting on his own now, and Barkley and McCarthy are in front of him as more of a 1-2 sort of midfield, and it's helping McCarthy a lot.
It's evident that with McCarthy, and certainly the first goal. I mean, it's something we've been crying out for a long time, is a centre midfielder that'll go past the forwards. You know, Cahill made a career out of it. You know, we've seen Lampard make a tremendous career out of it, and we've never really had that for a while. And it reminded me of like a Gary Speed type goal.
Roy Keane.
Yeah, Roy Keane again, bursting into the box, just bursting in, and riding the challenges and finishing off really well. And it's something we've seen a little bit more recently, as you mentioned there, of McCarthy. And it's something I've been crying out for about a year from the lad, because I think he's got it. And it's just a case of releasing him from the role he's been doing. And maybe it's the back four. Maybe Roberto Martinez is a little bit more comfortable with, now that, you know, Stones and Jagielka are in there more regularly, and he's got a little bit more control back there, and Stones can go into midfield and almost become that. And also with that, Gareth Barry can drop in and become another centre-half at times. So it is working perfectly well. I mean, on Stones again, you know, I thought defensively he was magnificent again. You know, when we're talking about England centre-backs on the pitch, he's, you know, if it's become between him and Smalling, I mean, there's only going to be one winner. And as you said before, that header capped it off for me, you know, getting his first goal on his 50th performance for Everton. And I mentioned when we played Southampton, the goal we scored, he made an attacking run, and it was the same run again, exactly the same run. Do you know, the ball getting whipped into the near post and him attacking it. Jagielka did the same thing in Kiev as well, attacking the ball early, you know, making something happen. And that's what he's done for the goal, and we haven't seen enough of that. So that tells me that maybe we're starting to work on set pieces as well. God forbid we're working on set pieces. So all these things are falling into place very late on in the season. But at least, you know, you get a lot of... it's funny, you know, you come home from the match, and I'm sure you're the same as me, mate. You get on your social media, you get on Twitter, etc. And you've got both sides of the camp patting themselves on the back. So you've got all the people who are pro-Martinez going, see, we told you. And then you've got all the people who are sort of anti-Martinez. See, we told you he had to change, and he did change. I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle, but he has definitely changed some aspects of the game, and it's for the better. You know, we suit playing this way. We can go and keep possession, or we can play the other way. You know, I don't know whether it's because we have found the formula on the left-hand side. We have found something that works on the right side with Alan Lennon. The fullbacks are starting to play a little bit more. We look more solid. We look more compact, and we just look better for it. You know, we look generally better all over the park now.
Yeah, that familiarity you touched upon breeds confidence, doesn't it? And looking at McCarthy in isolation, the fact that he's got Lennon there to cover Coleman now, and a lot of the season he's been playing on the right of those deep midfield too, and a lot of his job has been to either cover Morales or cover anybody else who's been playing on that right hand side. It's been Barkley, Naismith, even Eto at times earlier in the season, and that's kind of taken away from his game a little bit at times when he's been shuffling across to try and cover that space so we don't get caught on the break. Whereas now he's got a lad there who Martinez knows he can trust to get up and down the line, even drop inside and make an extra man in there to make us even more diligent and cohesive. So it's all about partnerships and that familiarity that we had last season and that was so crucial to our success is starting to come back now. And I think it's product of a few things, really. It's product because we haven't got the Europa League anymore. He's not changing the team as much, and simply because we've got a lot more players fitting and firing the team now.
It's not you know, square pegs and round holes either. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, all season we said about the left-hand side about changing it every week, and how, you know, it was just ridiculous. It was a different player every week, and now when Osman plays there, he's compact, he's solid, he lets or certainly creates a little bit more space for Barkley in the middle, and you know, as we've touched on, Lennon on the other side, we've got genuine pace and a player who will generally work hard as well, and you know, gets forward, gets back, is a threat, and it's, as you mentioned, it's all fitting into place.
Just say on Ross, I think he had a really good game on Sunday, and it wasn't the type of performance you'd usually, you know, that was usually drawing plaudits in terms of picking the ball up and driving forward with it. But he played understated, but he kept the ball really well. He did the clever things. He drew fouls a lot, and I thought it was probably his most mature and multifaceted performance of the season. Yeah. It's good to see.
One thing I was going to mention about Ross was there was I think it was second half, and he was running away from Rooney, and Rooney couldn't get near him, and it was funny because it brought up a vision in my mind of it was one of Barkley's first games for Everton under David Moyes when we played Manchester United, and he tried to take Wayne Rooney on, and Wayne Rooney just left him for, he just took the ball off him and left him in a pile on the floor. And that day it was like, man, this is the man and this is the boy. And it was almost like roles reversed on Sunday. You could see where Ross Barkley had grown up a little bit and was a lot more mature on the ball and wasn't just, I mean, he still does it. He's still infuriating. And he still tries to pass that's not on. But there was a little bit less of that, and there was more trying to find the ball that would lead to the next phase of play rather than just trying to create something out of nothing. And again, it was more mature. It was more in fitting with the tactics of the whole game, where it was about controlling the game, not just throwing everything at it, being patient and waiting to pick Manchester United off. So I thought he played really well. I wanted to just briefly touch on Kevin Morales as well. He comes on, gets another goal. First of all, just your thoughts on the goal and this offside rule.
I think if it was us, I'd be looking at our defenders and saying, why have you just completely stopped? Because there was no attempt from any United player to get the ball. There was no attempt from the goalkeeper to come and get the ball. and everyone stopped, and the only player on the pitch that was alert to the situation was Morales. And I think if you're going to play that sort of high line, which United did, and especially in the first half, they really pushed up the pitch and they squeezed the play really well to stop you from playing out. And I was just saying that we should just drop it in behind a little bit more and just get players running onto it. And as soon as Morales came on, I just thought, this is going to be a counter-attack goal. We're going to score on the break again here. So I think I could see the goal coming. In terms of the rule itself, there is some confusion, but he's come from so deep.
Yeah.
It's tough to really say that he is offside, and there is a bit of a grey area. But from my point of view, I've got no problem with standing.
See, I haven't got any problem with. The only problem I would have had with that goal is if he side footed it to Lukaku and Lukaku had scored. That's what I don't like.
That's what I don't like because
Lukaku is clearly offside. But how do you defend against Lukaku being offside, then being onside, but not actually being onside? So if he had knocked it in, I've seen that a few times, and that's quite distasteful. Yeah. I don't like that, but no problem with Morales. I mean, he run from his own half. When that ball was played, he was behind Ross Barkley when that ball was played. So good luck for him to getting on and a great finish. Again, he's come out after the game and made comments about wanting to stay. I don't know where to go with that. It's just like, you know, it's fine. 2 weeks in a row, scored goals, come out afterwards, asked, and he said, you know, I'm happy here, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, what can you got McCarthy as well coming out today saying, I'm happy, and you just don't want them stories full stop there in the press.
Everyone gets them, unless you're Real Madrid, Barcelona, or Bayern Munich. Every single player at every single club in the world has those sort of rumours hanging over the head, and they have to mention it. So I don't think there's any Evertonian that would be unhappy if Morales did stay and wanted to stay another year, because he is a player who, while he is infuriated sometimes and he can be a little bit temperamental, he scores goals, and I think that was that his 10th or 11th goal of the season.
Genuine threat. And I think the other thing about him is as well, when it sort of all happened and he went out the side, he hasn't come back automatically. You know, he was in last week and he was out this week, and it's almost like saying, well, if you want to try your luck elsewhere, that's fine, because you're not even an automatic player here. You know, you've got to, and I think that might help the situation rather than, you know, force him away. It's almost like saying, well, if you want to go, you try your luck somewhere else, but, you know, how about fighting for your place here first?
I think Lukaku said it, didn't he, in an interview he did with the club website last week. He said when he got dropped out December for Kone, he said it spurred him on. It made them think, oh, I need to get going again and get back in the team. And ever since then, he's looked a lot better player. So there's nothing wrong with dropping a player every now and then. You know, they can throw the toys out the pram. No.
Well, as I said, we had something like 35% possession, but we still had 7 shots on target today, 4. So I think deserved winners in the end, no problem. Right, coming up in part 2, we will be joined by Tony Batter from The Times. So again, to talk about the media's perspective on Everton and everything we discussed last week. We'll be right back.
The fans, the team, the gossip, the results. You're listening to The Blue Room on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the Blue Room, City Talk 105.9. Me, Peter McParland, Matt Jones in the studio. Now, Matt, last week we were talking about something that come up in the Echo about basically the Liverpool Echo reporting about Liverpool not winning a trophy for 1 year. this has rubbed, you know, a lot of Blues up the wrong way. And we spoke about this last week about media coverage, about how Everton are perceived. So we've got someone who knows all about that, Tony Barrett from The Times, formerly of the Liverpool Echo. He is a red, but I'm assured he's all right. So, Tony, great to have you on the show.
Gents, okay?
Yeah, not too bad.
Tony,
you're up there in the deepest, darkest hull.
Yeah, I've thought of all the things you want to do on a Tuesday night in April, this would be very low on the list.
Yes, especially at this time of the season where there's nothing to... We've all got our flip-flops on, basically, haven't we? It's become
well,
that
not
way.
Not with my white legs, mate. There's no flip-flops going on in my house.
So, I spoke to you last week. You know, you heard what we were basically discussing on the show regarding the media. And I've seen you today as well on Twitter having a bit of a ding-dong with some Blues. You know, from a journalist point of view, especially a national point of view, I mean, what's your perspective on it?
It's complex, mate. There's loads of things that go into what happens in a newspaper on a daily basis and what happens on websites on a daily basis. It's not as as say forwards, the journalists will wake up one morning and think, I want to write a piece about Everton, or I want to write a piece about Liverpool. You basically get pointed in certain directions. And when it comes down to it, newspapers are commercial operations. They're there to make money. And whether I like it or not, and I can certainly, anyone who knows me will say it, I don't particularly like it. The fact is that we're now in an era where everything's governed by web hits. So the number of web hits you have determines the business's revenue. And there are certain clubs which do attract more hits. You only have to put the name in. You don't have to write anything particularly massive about them. And they attract web hits. The two main ones would be Manchester United and Liverpool, because the fan bases throughout the country and worldwide are so large. And that does determine the kind of orders. That's what it's called. It's a journalist. You get an order from the desk of what they want you to write. So more often than not, the lads on Merseyside will be asked what is happening at Liverpool. Tell us what's happening at Liverpool. Primarily because Liverpool drives sales and newspapers and drives hits on their website. So that is the big thing. But as journalists, our job is to find out what's going on at every club and to make it sell in terms of selling to the desk. And at times, that is very difficult. It's not as straightforward as you think. If you think of Everton, they've had an average season. I think it's now. It was a poor season. I would say it was average. An average doesn't make. Crisis makes. Glory makes. But that bit in the middle where you're 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th doesn't tend to make. But I will say that there is exceptions to that deal, and that's Manchester United and Liverpool. It's not is what it is.
Do you think Everton fans, obviously 20 years without a trophy, and as we mentioned before, it was a story in the Echo last week, basically saying Liverpool haven't won a trophy for a year. Do you think Everton fans have got a right to ask those questions? Where are those reports, whether it be nationally or locally?
I think fans of every club have a right to make demands of the media. That they are the people who buy newspapers and who serve websites, and if there's nothing there for them, why should they bother? And so I do think we, as journalists, we have a duty to provide stuff for fans of every club. What I will say is that sometimes there's other things that go on that mean you wouldn't do. I wouldn't do stuff on Everton's 20 years right now. I would be doing it on the anniversary of, obviously in a few weeks' time, the anniversary of Everton winning the Cup in 1995. That's when I would be looking to do a piece. What happened then? You speak to people involved then, people at the club now. What's happened in between? What has turned Everton from a club which in the 80s was one of the dominant forces in England and beyond, to one which now is increasingly, and also around 20 years without a trophy, is that kind of status which you couldn't have envisaged for Everton. Even that where they battled relegation, you always had that thing that Everton's such a big club, they will come back, be strong, be competitive. So they're the kind of questions that will be asked around anniversary time. And I just think the thing with Liverpool is, again, I go back to that point, the focus on them is so huge. If I was in charge of Liverpool Echo, and my job depending on it, I would be saying to my staff, I need you to get as many Liverpool stories as possible, because they will get us the most hits, they will get us the most revenue, they will keep us in jobs. But equally, as the newspaper of the city, they have to treat Everton equally, and there's no way around that. And I think the Echo do. I know there's a lot of people think otherwise, but I think the Echo do. I think the very difficult thing is Liverpool is such a big national story that it gets so much exposure that I think nationally, I think Everton do get a raw deal, but it's the deal that all those clubs that have sort of fallen by the wayside tend to get.
Tony, from a journalist's point of view, if you were going to write a piece on Everton and the 20 years without a trophy, would you be concerned that you'll meet some resistance from the club further down the line, or is it something that you'd expect them to roll with? Because as a journalist, I imagine, you know, you look at the situation with Newcastle when they had the media blackout. Is that something that you'd be worried about as a journalist when you're doing a piece like that?
No more worried than I would be about any other club. All clubs like their side of the story to be reflected. That's why they have PR men, that's why they have press teams. That is what they're there for. They want to try and shape the narrative. Jonathan Loof from the Daily Telegraph wrote a great piece recently about the fact that increasingly supporters are being denied the knowledge of their club, and the history of their club is not being reported because there are so many barriers between journalists and what actually happens at clubs. I've never been subject to any kind of punishment from Everton for anything I've written. There was a point where I, and this was previous media regime, shall we say that, our newspaper carried something from the People's Group, just basically saying what their aims were, aims and objectives. Only about 400 words, but we said we'd give them the platform because it's fair that they're protesting against the club, we should say what they're protesting for. And the way people ever who were unhappy that we'd carried that piece and we made it known. But that is part of the course. That is no different to Liverpool during the Hicks and Gillette days when there was a lot of pressure on James not to carry stuff from Spirit of Shankly. And that is just part of the course of clubs up and down the land.
How much does it all get affected now by, you mentioned the web and obviously Twitter now is, I mean, it's a 24/7 business now, isn't it? I mean, that must really put undue pressure really on all journalists.
It does, but it also does something else. It alerts your consciousness in lots of ways. I don't mean that support on Everton Man United on Sunday. And because Man United are the biggest story in Everton at the moment, because they were going for third or second, and then they had this massive defeat under Van Gaal, which no one had seen coming, they become the story. There's also no way around that, but them losing that heavily is a huge story. Everton haven't got as much to play for, so it was a great end of season result, but it doesn't have a great impact. So the big impact is on the top end of the table, and so your mass support automatically reflects that. But someone tweeted me, an Evertonian tweeted me and said, I thought it was too much about Man United. And I went back and looked at the tweet and back, and I held my hands up as a guy, I agree. That kind of thing, I think, is priceless. Mm. There's some on Twitter who are batty right, and you can't win, but there are others who make you think and see things different way, and I think that's where it becomes vital.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's just, you do get picked up on every point, and as you say, sometimes it can be a good point. You know, we get plenty of that on this show. just generally on Everton, I mean, obviously, it looks like they've turned the corner too late. I mean, what are your overall thoughts on the way the season's gone?
It's a strange season. Honestly, if it would have went back a couple of months, I would have said that Roberto Martinez had to be under real pressure, because I couldn't see him coming up with any answers. I was thinking, you're going into a massive season next season where the TV money grows even bigger the following summer, and Everton really couldn't afford to miss out. And there was a downward trend which even didn't seem fair to arrest. But in the last couple of weeks, and I've got to be honest, I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought Everton were going to limp towards the finish line. But they've picked up pace from somewhere, and I don't know what it is. I think James McCarthy looking fitter is a big part of it, because for me, he's Everton's key player. But now you look up on the season, listen, you've got to look up on it as a failure from Everton point of view. Everton finished last season with 72 points. They're going to fall a long way short of that. And I still think the squad that Martinez has at his disposal, it should be better than that. And I think if you look at the likes of Ross Barkley, McCarthy's had an indifferent season, obviously a lot of injury, and there's quite a few players who just haven't performed. Morales has been fitful, and that to me, it came down to the manager. He never got a shape that was functioning as well as it had done the year before, and that is where the season went off the rails. But they're ending strongly, and you look on Sunday's performance, which was harking back to 12 months earlier, and if that momentum can continue into next season, there's no reason where Everton can't get back to where they were last year.
Do you think it's been a case of the pressures being off, so the performances have been allowed to just, you know, being able to go out there and be able to play what they want to play?
I don't know. I just thought the Everton got themselves messed up in that the manager wanted the team to play a certain way, and it didn't suit the team. It stopped suiting the team because opposition sides had cottoned onto it. And the big thing for me was they were pressing the fullback tie up the pitch, which meant Baines and Coleman couldn't get out as much, and it all broke down because Everton weren't doing things through the middle. But they've gone a bit more direct, and that suits the players. It certainly suits Lukaku more, and McCarthy's been asked to get forward more, and that in turn created more space for Barkley. And just those little subtle changes you can see, and I think Martinez was slow reacting. I think he should have seen what opposition sides were doing earlier and reacted quicker. But now he has acted, you can see Everton now look a good side again. So it's about continuing that momentum, as I say.
The next thing that's going to happen, obviously we're all going to be turning to the summer and wondering about the ins and outs. Do you think there'll be a big turnover at the club this summer?
I think there has to be. I just think there's a number of fringe players who aren't fit for purpose, and I think when you get that, you get them out. I mean, everyone knows who they are. Sylvain Distan's going to go. I think Stephen Pienaar should go. I know he's saying that he's going to be back. I think there's quite a few of that age. And I think it's that process of lowering the age, the average age, and getting younger players and more athletic players. And kind of like the Gareth Bale, because he's had a lot of this year, and Paul. But he made a point to us last week that he didn't come in to play every week.
Yeah.
He came in to play three games out of four, three games out of five, but in season with the players, and he's had to play more than he wants to. And I just think Bezic will come in more often next year than my young players around the piece that allow that kind of development to continue.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we're of the same opinion, and I think most people just want to see the likes of Distan, Alcaraz and a few others just see the back of them. Do you honestly believe there'll be any major outgoings? I mean, obviously there's been talk, Morales, obviously there's still talk about someone like McCarthy and obviously Lukaku. There's always a danger of losing him as well. Do you think the club will just try and make sure there is no big outgoings this summer?
I think Morales, I saw his quote in the Echo today saying he expects to still be wearing the same colour shirt next year. That one would be the one that would surprise me. I think his situation's become difficult to see what's gone on. Obviously, he had the penalty incident. I just think he's now at that stage where Tom Ratner said last week, we need to sit the players, find out whether they're happy to stay. And I just thought that was a significant thing in relation to Morales. So he's the one. I know there's an interest in a couple of Russian clubs, maybe a couple of clubs in this country. So I think he's the one. I don't see Ross Barkley going. I totally support the argument that he's in the right place for him. He's stage for him at Liverpool. It's about continued development of the best for him. I don't see big departures other than Morales.
Tony, just want to ask you about Ross Barkley quickly. It's been quite a tough season for him. He's had injuries. He's been played in different positions. How do you view his development as a player overall, especially as someone local? And are you expecting him to go on and achieve bigger things next year?
No, I'm a big fan of Ross. I like the fact that he likes to get on the ball and try things. And I know there are people who've tried to beat that out of him. I know that Roy Hodgson was critical of him when he's been with England and basically said he's not happy with where and when he gives the ball away. And I understand, and that can be difficult with a player like Ross, but if you take that out of him, if you take that desire to try and make things happen away from him and replace it with a fear of giving the ball away, I think you may as well play anyone there. I think you may as well play any bog average midfield player. Like, what you want is Ross Barkley trying everything. You want Ross Barkley getting shots up. You want him getting around the box. And you do that in the knowledge that when he's 25, 26, his decision-making will be much better. People forget how young he is, how little football he's played, the big ins he had as a teenager, the leg break that set him back, cost him a year of football. And all those things, I think they do come as the players develop. And you've got to leave him now and let him get on with it. And I've got thought that Martinez has complicated things for him over the last 12 months. I think playing from the left doesn't work. It doesn't suit. He needs the pitch to open in front of him. He needs options ahead. He needs movement ahead. And he wasn't getting that where he is. And I think playing him as number 10 or even as a bit further back as a more conventional midfield against QPR, I think that's what suits him. I think you will see next season the best of Ross Barkley.
Tony, big thanks for coming on the show and giving us a clearer idea of what happens at National Press and very honest and also good luck to all them Reds tonight who are protesting for the cheaper tickets. I think it's a big thing. So nice one, Toe, for coming on.
Cheers, Tony.
Big thanks to Tony there for coming on the show with all his beeps. I think he was playing Snake at the same time. Right, you're listening to the Blue Room. We'll be right back.
1 hour, everything Everton on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the Blue Room with me, Peter McPartland, and Matt Jones in the studio. Aston Villa on Saturday. But before we talk about Aston Villa, Matt, just wanted to pick your brain on something. Wayne Rooney. Mm-hmm. Phil Jagielka's comments last week about him wanting to come back to the club. He had a bit of a quiet game on Sunday, to be honest. It doesn't seem to be much fire in his belly anymore when he plays against Everton. I mean,
he always does, doesn't he?
when he first came back, there was a lot of anger there from both sides. And, it either meant he had a great game or it threw him in some games. But there doesn't seem to be much there anymore. And Phil Jagielka said, he'd like to come back. Not the end of his career. Around maybe next couple of years. Forget about his history. Would you have him back as a player, first of all?
If it was the next couple of years, definitely. Because I think there's still a lot there for him to offer us as a centre-forward. And I know he never seems to have the greatest game at Goodison, but if you look at some of his performances up front in recent weeks for United, and some of the goals he scored, he's still a good forward. He's a goal scorer. He can be a target man. He can run in behind. He can do all those things. So I've no problems having him back. And just I did a piece on this the other week, just a shameless plug of one of my articles. But I did a piece on this saying how over time the move between the club and Rooney has sort of mellowed a bit, and the fans. And on Sunday there was no real harsh reaction towards him at all. There's only, you know, a couple of chants that went in his direction. And I know time's a great healer, but football fans in particular are quite fickle, and they do seem to have long memories when it comes to stuff like that. But when it comes to Rooney and Everton, it does seem to have mellowed. And I think if he did score a goal against us now, Goodison, I don't think you'd see him celebrate, because he's a player who he's matured as a person. You look at he's got Everton kits for his. For his young lad, he came to watch us at the semi-final and the final as well. He did an interview with the club official website in 2010. So I think he's matured. At the time, he was badly advised, and we all knew he was a tempestuous lad. And ultimately, he seems to have learned from that, and he's a lot more understanding of what the club did for him and what the club probably does still mean for him. So if it was the next couple of years, I definitely want to have him back, and providing we're not paying him 300 grand a week like he's on now. But it's going to come from Rooney ultimately.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, he's still got about 4 years left on a contract at Man United. So it wouldn't happen for at least another 2 years, and then people would have to look at it and think, well, is he still got is he still at the peak that we need him to be? But when you're watching the Rooney Kone run round when he's 32 up front, I'd have no problem trying to watch Wayne Rooney do it. So, it wouldn't bother me at all. And all the other stuff doesn't really bother me at all, as you say. It would have to come from his end. And
United aren't going to give him away either, are they? They're going to sell him. They're going to want a decent fee, even if he is 32 and he's still a good player. They're not going to just let him walk away when he's the club captain and one of the most experienced players in the squad. So there's a lot of hurdles to overcome before it does come even close to happening.
But when you watch performance like that, you do wonder, you think to yourself, how much has he still got to offer Manchester United as they go forward? How much does he want to offer Man United? Because he looked a little bit like, I don't know, a little bit dead inside on Sunday, to be honest with you. Do you know what I mean? It's they're going back to the Champions League, but how long are they going to be before they're actually competing for those trophies? And he's won everything, and you think, funny enough, I was going through his trophies and thinking the only thing he hasn't won is the FA Cup. He could come and win that with Everton. Yeah. He could break the hoodoo and win an FA Cup at the same time. The only trophy he hasn't won. So there's still something for him to...
You suspect that if he did win a cup with us as well, it'll probably be worth more to him than anything he's won with United. And he's obviously been a fantastic player for them. And the silverware he's won and the goals he's scored speak for himself. But I always maintain that as Evertonians, we saw the best of him as an individual player when he was in the blue shirt, and he was just let off the leash.
Yeah,
he was raw and he was energetic. So, you know, it's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, I still maintain I don't think he's ever become the player he could have become if he was just, as you just said, let off the leash a little bit, because he had all the arrogance and all the ability of someone like, you know, Messi. Maybe not anywhere near as good as Messi, but, you know, that kind of... And then he was changed into a formulaic player, playing, you know, he'll play on the left for you, he'll play on the right for you, he'll play down the middle for you, you know, and it was interesting that he was miles ahead of Ronaldo, and then Ronaldo become the main man at Man United. And I don't know, it always felt like every time he got a chance to be the main man at Man United, they went and bought someone else and made them the main man instead. So I don't know. It's never seemed to have... he's got all the trophies in the world, and I'm sure he's very, very happy, but I'm sure he's got one little burning desire left.
I read a great line on him from, I think it was Daniel Harris from The Guardian. He said he could have been a fantasy player, but now he's just a fantasy league player. And I think that sums it up absolutely perfectly. He could have been an all-time great. And if you look at the goals he scored for United and England, he'll be remembered as a great, but when he burst onto the scene at Everton, he should have gone on to become one of the best players ever, in my opinion. He had the ability, he had the physicality to do it, but he's not quite reached that level for me.
Interesting stuff. As we said, Villa on Saturday. I think I'm optimistic about this game, because I think if you look at the way the league's shaping up now, and obviously as we touched on that, we're comfortable, we're relaxed, we're playing well. Whereas Villa, you know, it's not that comfortable for them. They're still only a couple of points above the relegation. Okay. And they'll be looking at this game and thinking, this is a game we've got to win on Saturday. I think they've got 3 home games out of 4. But they don't want it to be going down to the last couple, do you know what I mean? They want to be getting these early wins in. They want to get the next two games won. And I think that might mean a little bit of nervousness around the place, that if we can, you know, go in there, get that first goal, and suddenly it becomes, it's not Tim Sherwood's fantasy land anymore. It's actually back to the real world. I think that gives us a chance of getting the 3 points.
Yeah, if you look at the table, I mean, there's 3 teams below them, directly below them are Leicester, Sunderland and Hull. And if they all win their game in hand, Villa go back into the bottom 3. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that's correct. And, you know, Leicester have got Chelsea home, Hull have got Liverpool at home, and Sunderland have got Arsenal, I think, are their game in hand. But we've seen so many times in recent seasons, you know, Martinez did it at Wigan, Sunderland did it last season. These results can happen at this time of the season, and with Leicester winning 4 games on the bounce, Hull got a good result at the weekend at Palace. They're not safe at all, yeah, Aston Villa, and I think they have kind of taken their eye off the ball a little bit with getting to the FA Cup final, and there's been a lot of praise for Sherwood and the job he's done. But they will be nervous, and if, like you said, if we start the game well, we stay cohesive, play in the similar manner to how we played on Sunday, then it's there for us. And the way they play, and under him, and all his teams have played the same way, whether it's at Tottenham or at Villa, they come flying out the traps, they get the fullbacks bombing forward. And if we just set up in exactly the same way we played against United, let them come onto us a little bit, and then let Lukaku and Lennon and Barkley expose a back line for them, which is tough, and they've got strong players with the likes of Vlaar and Hutton and Akore. But if you get the ball running at them, they're there for the taking, and I think that's how we should set up going into the game.
And they've only actually won 1 of the last 5 games. You know, it's not. I know. You know, they won a couple on the bounce that got them out of real dire straits, but they only won 1 of the last 5, and it's all right going to places like the Etihad and nearly winning and coming back from 2-0 down. But ultimately, they got beat. You know, they're going to be really, really desperate for those points, and I think we can make, you know, we can capitalise on that on Saturday, especially especially defensively, the way we've been in the last 6 games, only conceding a couple of goals, one of them being a penalty. I think defensively we look really, really strong, and yes, Benteke is in really good form, but at the same time, you know, we're not easy to break down at the moment. And I think, as I say, if that nervousness keeps in a Villa Park, I think we can go and get the 3 points.
Definitely, yeah, we can stroll up in our flip-flops and win the game, hopefully. But it's all going to be about how we start in this one, I think. And if they get an early goal and the crowd's up and they go along to Benteke and he's unsettling us and the whole thing gets a little bit ragged, then that's going to suit them, that sort of game. Whereas if we are in control again, like we were against United, no problem letting them off the ball with the likes of Delph and Cleverley. They haven't the good players and the functional players, but they're not the type of player that will cut through with an incisive pass. They're not gonna prize open at a back 4 like you said. That's been cohesive and diligent so far. So just go there, keep it tight, and then the likes of Lennon, Barkley, and Lukaku should cause major problems on the break against their back 4.
Yeah, I've got a feeling Lennon's gonna be an important part of this game.
Especially away from home. He scored against Swansea and QPR, hasn't he, already? So he's shown that he can be that man on the road.
Now, obviously, they are in the FA Cup final. I mean, just very quickly, what's your thoughts on Tim Sherwood? Because he comes off as a bit of a joker, but he seems to be doing all right.
I don't mind him, to be honest. I think he doesn't take himself very seriously, does he? He knows what he is. He knows his limitations. And he comes into teams and he gives them a lift with his leadership skills and his motivation. It's just whether, after that's all faded away and not become a novelty anymore, whether there's anything left afterwards to sustain a dynasty or a few years back to back.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. As I say, I fancy us there at Villa Park on Saturday. Big thanks to Matt for tonight. Big thanks for Tony Ballard coming on as well and cleaning a few things up. You've been listening to The Blue Room. Good night.
This is The Blue Room. 1 hour, everything Everton. The Blue Room on City Talk 105.9.